All right, we're back. And that next link you guys have up there is something that is very, very cool. A bright flash of light marks the incredible moment life begins when sperm meets egg. So, I want to turn this over to you guys first, and I want to hear your thoughts of this.
I'm kind of waiting to hear what everybody has to say myself. We
Trevor?
talked about this so many times. I mean, we've always said, at the beginning of mitosis, there's electrical discharge that takes place, and we can study this by observing the visible light that takes place. And this is another study to confirm that, which we've seen so many times before. So this electrical universe from the very start. Spark of life.
Right. What's interesting is they apparently have seen this before in a mouse. And so the notion that such a thing can happen isn't necessarily new. But this is the first time we've seen the flash of light when a sperm meets an egg, when a human sperm meets a human egg. And this is really interesting from a metaphor, from a philosophical perspective. But let's start from a physical, a chemical perspective. What we're seeing here is zinc radiating out in a burst. Now, have any of you guys seen what it looks like when zinc burns? Billy, what does zinc look like when it burns?
But generally, it turns white.
Yeah, just the most beautiful. I mean, it looks a lot like, it looks a little something like magnesium, right?
Yeah,
Magnesium does the same thing. It's that, I mean, you may have seen it in a chemistry class. It's that kind of white, bright burning where you're like, wow, that is not fire. That is something completely different. And I think it's really interesting that it is zinc that is bursting out from the egg. And interestingly, the brightness, the brighter the burst of light from the zinc radiating out is, the better the quality of the fertilized egg, the more likely they will produce a healthy baby. Now, we could go right to the joking side of this and saying, oh, I bet that one's going to be the bright one. Let's seriously consider this, the fact that the energy release when sperm meets egg can be indicative of the viability of the life to come.
Conservation of energy. The first law is it cannot be destroyed. It's never created or destroyed. So isn't the release of light a release of energy? So I would think that the less light, the more energy was going into the fertilization process, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's fascinating to
No,
think
oh
of
no no
that.
no
The
no
light
that
is, it's
no it
ionization.
Xavier, it's the other way around. Brighter is better.
Yeah. It's an ionization taking place in
No, that's what I'm saying.
and
In
then
this case,
transmutation. All right, we have everybody talking over each other here. That's got to stop. All right, Xavier, go ahead and finish what you're going to say there.
no, that's what I was saying. The brighter is better in this case, but when you step back and think about the conservation of energy, brighter means a larger release of energy that's not going into whatever the function is
Oh no,
that's causing.
but here's the thing. if you don't metabolize food very well, and versus somebody who does metabolize food very well, you're gonna have, a lot different of an energy change. I mean, it's going to appear like a lot less energy is coming off of you because you're not metabolizing as well, but also at the same time, you're not as viable. You're not gonna grow as big. That release of energy is indicative that a more energetic sperm hit it. I think that that's more of a reaction of the egg itself, where if a perfect sperm was to meet the perfect egg, there wouldn't be that silhouette just on one side. It would be a complete flash over the, it would be the brightest one you could ever see type of thing. I tend to see it as not indicative of how much energy is going in, you know, meaning that the darker ones are keeping more of the energy. I think of it as those ones didn't get as energetic of a sperm, maybe. I see what you're saying. But it would seem to me that when you see those bright ones, you're watching the most energetic of potential lives proving themselves before they really ever even become anything at all. This is also another interesting thing. I know we try not to talk about certain social issues that are really divisive, but think about what this does to the abortion discussion. Now, as a 31-year-old male who has never been forced to think about this too much and has only really thought about it peripherally, never had to deal with the situation, I can't really say that I'm necessarily, or even any of us, are the best people to be talking about this. However, a man could be forgiven for thinking that this gives an argument to the people who say life actually begins at conception, not at a heartbeat, or not at some other. I mean, and I'm not saying I advocate for that or against that, but one could be forgiven for thinking that somebody who says life begins at conception just got a big boost in their argument from this article.
Hell yeah.
You guys agree there, maybe?
Hell yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, it is factual evidence that life begins at inception. The very moment of conception, the spark, the transmutation is taking place, and that life is coming into existence from, it's hard to grasp, but from energy, from that electrical discharge, that electricity is the driving factor behind that life. And even in a cellular death, you have the same thing. In cell death, it emits light. And, you know, the creation of water, you have light being emitted. There's light showing up in every phase of this, not just at birth and death, but during different recourses of the cell's natural life. It'll be seen transmitting different frequencies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. What's interesting and practical about this is that a lot of in vitro fertilization and a lot of these, what some would call non-natural conception methods, you know, a lot of it is a bit of a crapshoot. Maybe they've fertilized 9 eggs here, but how do they know which one's good? Up until this, it was just sort of pick one at random. How do they look? Does one look misshapen? All right, maybe don't pick that one.
Well, it's not pick one, it's put 9 in there and end up with, 8 babies. Well, literally, that's what they do. They would implant all and then remove the inviable ones.
Is that really what they do?
That's part of in vitro. I had that option available to us.
I did not know that. That's interesting. Well, this may actually take away some of that need. They may be able to just identify which ones are the best based on their zinc flashes. Something interesting which might give you an idea as to why the extra zinc flash, or the brighter the flash, the greater the energetic interaction, might signal a more viable life, occurs in this paragraph down there towards the bottom of the article. It says the bright flash occurs because when a sperm enters an egg, it leads to a surge of calcium, which triggers the release of zinc from the eggs. As the zinc shoots out, it binds to small molecules which emit a flare, blah, blah, blah. We're past the important part. Did you guys catch the important part there?
Yeah, calcium.
Yeah, it leads to a surge of calcium. So that means that it's not just about the sperm, it's about the egg as well. So the sperm and the egg working together, whichever one's creating the most calcium will trigger the most zinc and will create the brightest flash. And you know, unless you literally have no idea what bones are made of, you have to see how a greater surge of calcium initially could be beneficial to a life that was starting out, especially when their skeletal structure is based on calcium.
Yeah, calcium, magnesium, zinc. I mean, these are metals, multi-minerals, fusing together, create the calcium bonds.
Yes.
Brilliant, brilliant, deep.
Yeah, I mean, the flash itself is very interesting. What's going on behind the flash, especially chemically, is probably just as interesting because, you know, we have a reason. You know, we don't just say, oh, like, it's a bright flash. What do we know about that? Oh, these are the eggs that are most viable. That's interesting that those are the ones that flashed, but why? We actually have multiple levels of the analysis done for us here by these scientists, which is really nice because scientists these days tend to go one step at a time and leave you asking a bunch of questions until they get up the, you know, the work ethic to publish another paper. But this is, I don't know, I think this is super cool.
Yeah, they're presenting facts. You know, they're presenting the observable evidence for us to make these conclusions, draw conclusions from.
Yeah.
Many questions.
Go ahead, Billy.
I can't help but relate this to how stars are formed and galaxies and maybe even a Big Bang.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about a comet hitting the sun, creating a solar flare.
Yeah, well, just think about Big Bang theory. That's a very brilliant, Billy, because go back to religious, you know, at the beginning there is a explosion of light. I mean, that is fundamentally breaking down, taking place every day when a baby is being first, I say, inception, because it takes place in the mind of those two individuals to come together, and then through conceiving the actual event, creation.
You know,
it's amazing.
Trevor, sometimes I think you're an. Sometimes I think you spout off accidental genius here. This is literally the embodiment of, at the beginning, when there was nothing, let there be light. That I mean, Trevor, that was so well said. There's no better way to sum up this article and really what it means. That was very cool. Xavier, did you want to add something else before we moved on?
I wanted to hear more of Billy.
Yeah.
Well, Trevor and I talked about this when we saw the article, you know, about let there be light.
Yeah.
Could this actually be you know, how the universe was started? And what's this going to do to people like the Thunderbolts who laugh at that notion, you know?
Yeah.
I can't get over how, you know, well, their theory of how a star is formed almost spontaneously on a Birkeland current. Yet it's inconceivable to them that the universe created the same way, you know, which would be conceived as a Big Bang.
Yeah, well, we all know what the, we all know that there's,
this electric universe can confuse people.
Well, it really can. And, you know, without saying too much negative, I've been invited to join the Thunderbolts a number of times, and I am not. So there's a reason for that. But we'll get it figured out over the next 2 to 3 decades as some of the older ways of thinking move on and we're able to fix a lot of the mistakes that really are persisting because of just basically the fact that they've persisted, and then there's a little bit of ego holding them up as well. But as soon as those elements are gone, the new electric universe theories have a real opportunity to take off. And it'll be things like this. And looking into alternative explanations for how the Big Bang happened or what the Big Bang looked like. You know, one of the bigger problems I've always had with, you know, alternative ways of thinking like this is, you come up with one thing that you think debunks the full mainstream story. And then you go ahead and think you've debunked the entire mainstream story. Okay, so maybe a black hole isn't exactly what they think it is. Maybe the Big Bang wasn't exactly what they thought it was. Does that mean that there's not this massive gravitational matter-eating stuff at the center of galaxies? Does this mean that there was not some initial flash of light and beginning to this universe? There might be other universes. This might be the 500th billionth cycle of this universe. It might be a repeating thing where we blow up, collapse, blow up again. You know, you make a good point there. You know, what the electric universe has done a great job at is poking holes, creating Swiss cheese. But then they go and they try to call the cheese something other than cheese. They say, oh no, see, this isn't cheese anymore. That's where the future of the new electric universe is, in finding that middle ground and seeing exactly where those secret pathways to meet up with the mainstream are, because it's not like the mainstream has everything in the world wrong. You know, it's not like we don't know anything about rocket science. It's not like we can't predict the positions of the planets. It's not like we don't know how much thrust it takes to get from here to there, et cetera. So, you know, I mean, do you guys see sort of
and isn't the mother lode dark energy?
Well,
because if you can somehow grab dark energy into the electric universe theory and say, there's your explanation for dark energy, what, 80%? And
well,
then dark matter?
You know, to be honest, it's we've mentioned this a couple of times on these podcasts before. I mean, I really think that at the end of the day, they're going to find that what they think of as dark energy is just what little of vacuum energy they're able to realize, detect, measure. This vacuum energy thing is the big game changer in physics, for real. It basically means space is not a vacuum. It basically means that everything is interconnected. It basically means that Star Wars, the Force, is real, although we can't exactly manipulate it and use it the way that Jedi's can. But, you know,
there are discrepancies within the Thunderbolts project, the electric universe, as there is with the standard model.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing I'd like to attribute to the Thunderbolts project is their ability to teach others to question the observable evidence. And I like to give them, you know, a big heads up for that, because without Thunderbolts, you know, leading this march to ask a lot of these questions, we're not going to get these minds united together into a general theory that works. You know, and the unification, you know, isn't going to come through the Thunderbolts project. It isn't going to come through, you know, the standard model. It's going to come through the resulting people who have listened to the theories of the Thunderbolts and the standard model. I'm going to draw that same conclusion that we're coming to. It's somewhere in between both models, that neither model has anything completely hammered down, and we're still in the dark on a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I think that was.
We still need a lot of evidence before we can draw any conclusions.
Yeah. So. Well, that goes for a lot of topics. What little we are able to do is see merit on both sides of the aisle, and also see that the only thing that's going to stop true progress is ego on either side of the aisle.
Agreed.
And
ego is the biggest problem.
The animosity towards each other. I mean, have you felt and noticed that, like, the animosity of the mainstream towards the Thunderbolts, the animosity of the Thunderbolts towards the mainstream?
Yeah, just go on the Thunderbolts forums. You can read it since day one. There's been constant controversy, and anybody that wants to come in and really learn the model has to weed through all that crap, so to speak, before they can actually get to understanding what the Thunderbolts are even talking about.
Yeah.
I've dealt with several people that I've sent their way, and they deal with the same thing. It's too much controversy. It's too much arguing and fighting. I think we're losing sight of the main goal here, and it's just nonstop bickering and arguing.
Yeah.
Slow progress.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, a lot of their efforts these days are now completely focused on their conferences. They're trying to make their conferences their big thing, and as fun as these conferences are, I can tell you this is not the way you get information out to a lot of people. And this is not, and like the conferences, boy, is this not a sustainable or easy thing to do. The Thunderbolts need to just take their 10 most important points, make either one mega video or 10 small videos, spend all the money that they were going to spend on the conference, and just promote the crap out of those videos. I mean, that's what we have to do, really. We have to literally just put all the information we can out there as best we can, as much as we can. Literally, just feed the planet. Just never stop pumping that information out there.
I agree.
Because I'll tell you what I noticed when I started to do the conferences. And I think I've done a pretty good job keeping up with the news and the websites and the research and everything else. But I can definitely say, when we were trying to put these conferences on, I felt a little business. You know, I felt like there was a part of me that was just, you know, focused on business. And I really hated that. What I love is when business for me is just doing what I love. Just putting out as much information as possible and hoping it comes back to us, you know, in some kind of positive form.
Yeah. That's always been the success of the model.
You are right.
What made us successful from the beginning was always giving the information out for free.
Yeah.
Why are we working a profit-based model, you know, towards conferences like, you know, the EU has so focused their efforts so intently on when, you know, Mikamar Publishing and, I mean, we're charging outrageous rates for these videos and stuff that this should be free. That if you really want to help people or help humanity, this information should always be free.
Right.
And with the age, everybody's getting up there in age. Come on, let's talk seriously about the future of the project. The next 100 years could be put into video format, could get out of these contracts with Mikamar and get the material out there to people for free. I was at a used bookstore just the other day looking for Velikovsky material. And a person, you know, had a hard time finding Velikovsky material, and there's like two books there. Two old books that are so scrapped and worn down that they probably have another 10 or 15 years and they're going to disintegrate. And there ain't going to be no Velikovsky material around for people to even look at or care about, or any of these theories that Thunderbolts have propped up are fading away as quick as you know, our bodies are. So let's get the material digitized. Let's get it in a format that can remain long after we're gone.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I would qualify what you said, and I think you're going to agree with this. You know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, if they want to write a – if one of them wants to write a book, you know, okay, sell that book. Or, you know, like for example, with the morning news and the websites that – you know, all those free resources. I feel like if you want me to do some deep homework for you, I can make a little profit and feed my daughter off of that. But in terms of the most vital information, I mean, what do I do when I think a deeper look episode is extraordinarily vital to everybody? I make it public. I put it on YouTube or I don't content protect the page. You know, this is something that I think our community came really close to losing, and that is remembering what this community is all about.
Exactly.
You know, it's important that we stick to it.
Both of you, that was really well said. I totally agree.
You know, I mean, like, for example, Don Scott's Electric Sky or Dave Talbot's books. I don't necessarily, I mean, like, I don't have a problem with them writing books and selling them. But, you know, when we're at the point now where if you want the latest on what the real scientists are doing with the Thunderbolts, I mean, you're not going to get that in space news. You're really not going to get – I mean, you'll be lucky if you can find it on the website. But really the only way to do it is to pay all that money and go to the conference. Otherwise, you're never going to hear these things.
Yeah, or buy the conference on video.
Yeah, or buy the conference,
you know,
on video.
We get some tidbits through the Thunderbolts channel, which is excellent. You know?
Oh, yeah, of course.
We get some information there. That's great, you know, but it's very incomplete. A lot of the information, like around sapphires, all held so close to the chest. And,
yeah, I don't mind expressing how frustrated I am about sapphire secrecy.
There's so many things like that. There's inner circles and so much secrecy that takes place within the group itself that, you know, you really don't get the feed of, you know, the scientists behind it, like Don Scott and Claridge.
Well, back in 2014, I remember having a conversation with those guys, and I said, look, if you guys aren't ready to stand up to somebody telling you to be quiet and just tell the world what you found anyway, you guys should not take this money and start this project. And what did they do? They took this money, and we have heard almost nothing out of them.
Yeah. And who paid for the project? So let's think about those things. You know, think about the treatment, you know, from different people at the Thunderbolts towards people that just want to learn, you know, at the forums. I mean, these are all issues that have to be addressed for Thunderbolts to, you know, clean up their image, so to speak, because these things just create more negative connotation. We get a lot of wiki articles popping up with negative feed about the Electric Universe, and it's true. You can't hide the truth.
Yeah.
You just go look at the forums, look at the controversy. Is it shills embedded trolls causing all that mainstream versus Electric Universe? Yeah. But where's the individuals? Where's the real leaders stepping up and saying this is nonsense, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a Harvard professor or if it's just some, you know, idiot show on the internet. The way that they handle those things, the way that and just their existence makes a difference. But anyway, what can you do, really? That's our goal for the next 20 to 30 years. Figure out how to take the gems that the Electric Universe theories have created over the past couple of decades, try to pull them from the mine and get them to see the light. You know, get all that dust off them, get the coal off them, separate them from the iron, get them out there where they can actually be viewed properly and they're not in the midst and hidden among a bunch of other crap that you don't want. But anyway, it's fun to dream. We may be a ways away. But yeah, as fun as the conferences were, kind of getting back to that, I can't really envision doing another one. Just because, it's really, I would be doing it for the personal interaction. And you can do that in the Mobile Observatory. I don't need to, you know, go get a conference venue and have people pay money to come see it. I'll just drive the Mobile Observatory around and see people.
Well, then you better come up northeast, because there's a lot of people up here that would love to interact.
Yeah, you know, I did have fun in the northeast, but very, very hilly. Driving the Mobile Observatory through Vermont was no fun at all. But I suppose it was more fun than driving over RV Killer Mountain in the Canadian Rockies, which our RV did survive, but oof. Anyway, we had another topic to talk about here. It was a revisitation of the sugar concept, but I really wanted Tony Rango around for that one, so I think we'll save that for next week. Just a quick little reminder, folks. Right now, we are, as I mentioned at the beginning, getting to that point where we're going to have to start worrying about tropical storms in the Western Hemisphere. And other than that, we continue to expect the Earth facing quiet to dominate the sun. So we'll be focused on the coronal holes and the earthquakes. Other than that, we are keeping our eyes on all this stuff, as always. You guys planning to have a good Saturday?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully you guys all have a good Saturday as well. That was hopefully it'll be as enthusiastic and light-filled as Trevor's appears like it's going to be. Be safe, everyone.